Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 528th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia. Oh, my goodness, this is not a good start.
No, it's not good. I was like, did he include his whole intro?
Did I?
Yeah, I don't know.
I just said, hi, it's James.
It fell short.
Maybe I didn't. I'm not going to go back and listen to it, though.
I better pull myself together. So I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and the director of practice support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada. I'm also an adjunct professor at UVA. And you would never guess it by this intro, but we are re-recording this.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This is the redo. We were just talking before we started recording, and we've only ever redone one other podcast, and I can't remember what it was. Who knows what it was?
But in the first five, I think that we
maybe did, yeah. But we did. We recorded one a couple of days ago, and it just didn't flow very well, and we thought it was an important topic, and so we decided to redo it. Although it's not starting off well. So
I was going to say this is one of our most brutal pickups. But anyhow, yeah. we're gonna bounce back, James.
Oh yeah, yeah. So this is take two. So what we're going to talk about is, I was given a title to this of how we can mathematically prove why measuring cholesterol levels more than once in a patient's lifetime may not be needed. You just don't necessarily need to redo them. And we're going to sort of go through that. Now, there's some caveats to that as we go through that, but that's kind of the point that we're going to try and get across. But it requires a lot of math and thought through, but we'll help you with that. It's not difficult math. So, as you know, Mike, there's really only two reasons why we measure cholesterol, whether it be total cholesterol or LDL or HDL or whatever you want to measure. You're measuring it to make an assessment of cardiovascular risk, or you're looking to see if a person's cholesterol has changed. Now, and there are two camps, as you know, about measuring cholesterol. So we decided to look at the evidence rather than pushing ourselves into one of those two camps, because as you would agree, Mike, I'm sure, a lot of this is not necessarily based on evidence. It's sort of a very strongly opinion-based.
Yeah, so this is... it's almost become a spiritual thing. Mm-hmm. It's whether you believe that you need to monitor cholesterol and check it regularly and follow up on it and know your, and there is a, there, you can even get home test strips to check mm-hmm. your cholesterol. And we've developed an industry almost around building fear around cholesterol.
Exactly. Yeah. So what we want to do is work you through some of this stuff, and I think you'll probably find it, somewhat interesting, because I think, and this is a change, I think, over the last 10 years, is almost every guideline, regardless of what their philosophy is, they say that you should assess cardiovascular risk rather than just looking at the cholesterol number. And I think you'd agree that's a really good thing. The problem is it's not done perfectly.
Well, there's a lot of times that it's assess cardiovascular risk, and then, without saying the word ignore, they basically say ignore that, but... Yeah. And then all of these other things like measure apolipoprotein, target this for their LDL, etc.
Yeah, no, exactly. So let's sort of run through the math of what we're trying to do here. And as many of you know, we a number of years created a risk calculator, and we'll put links to that. Hopefully, some of you are already using this. And it's like any other risk calculator, other than I think ours is the best. but it's like any other risk calculator. It uses sort of either a Framingham database or in the States an ASCVD or QRisk or something like that. And what you do is you go on there and you add in patient characteristics, age, you know, gender, smoke, diabetes, all those different things. And then it gives you a ballpark 10-year estimate, usually at least, of a heart attack or a stroke. And so... And in our calculator, you can actually push on the buttons and it'll tell you how much you benefit. That's, I think, somewhat unique, but at least that's what we're talking about. So the issue is, how often do you have to do this? And I don't mean how often do you have to put it in the calculator. It's how often do you have to remeasure. And if you look at many guidelines, you know, Mike, if you do a cholesterol and you decide not to treat, they say to do it, to repeat it sort of every 5 years or 10 years. And I think that's a little bit of a, they feel like people feel like they have to say something. So they say 5 or 10 years, because it used to be, and I know you're familiar with this, is it would be done yearly and sometimes even more frequently than that.
Well, it would to follow up on a recent measurement. And then there was suggestions about screening for risk of heart disease, et cetera. And they vary from one, and then they extended to 3 years. And then now they extend it to 5 years. Yeah. And then there's some that suggest 10. And there's a bunch of things going on here, far more than the evidence and the amount of change. It's people's comfort with letting go of cholesterol as the primary discussion point and moving it to risk. There's there's some significant things there, and our whole belief around the importance of, remember, there are literally hundreds and hundreds of risk factors, and cholesterol and its different components are all individually LDL, total cholesterol, non-HDL. All of these can be pulled apart to be individual risks, just like different types of measurement of sugars and all sorts of things. But there's a host of different things that, but we've really picked cholesterol to be our thing.
Yeah. Well, because it's a great visual. You know, you eat cholesterol, it goes into your arteries, it plugs them, and then you have a heart attack.
It's the mechanism, the pathway to imagine this, to draw it. You've all seen pictures, I'm sure, of a vessel with hamburgers floating down it or something like that. Mm-hmm. Instead of the traditional red blood cell. So there's just a lot of images that play on this, or the thick, ugly looking plaque on the side of a wall and all of those things.
Yeah, yeah. So what we're going to do is we're going to go, you know, you can go to a guideline, and if you want to do it every year, we could probably find you one. Every 5 years, we could find you one, and every 10 years. But what we wanted to do is go through the logic of it. And none of this is even going to deal with, and we'll maybe deal with this in another podcast, about the measurement variation, which brings a whole other complexity. But what we thought we'd do is just show how much does cholesterol change over time, and if it did change, what does that do to risk? So what we're going to do is we're going to go through two examples. We're going to go through one person whose baseline risk is around 5% over 10 years. And that's typically considered lower. Most people wouldn't treat it that one. I think we should still have a discussion, but most people wouldn't treat. And then we're going to do another one where they're at about 15%. So we're going to start off with a person who's at about a 5% 10-year risk. And that would be a 50-year-old female, non-smoker, systolic blood pressure about 130, total cholesterol 4.5 or 175 milligrams in the American units, and an HDL of about 1 or 40 in the sort of American units. So if you put that into a risk calculator using the Framingham risk engine, if you will, their 10-year risk is about 5%. So, I mean, if you saw that patient, I'm not sure what much of a discussion you'd have. You'd just say that's what it is. But if you looked at their cholesterol levels, some people might say you should treat that.
Yeah. So, yeah, depending on the guideline.
Yeah, yeah.
The different target. The guideline targets are shifting down. It used to be around 10% was mm-hmm. when you have conversations about interventions, but now they've shifted down. And there's argument about which calculator you're using,
exactly.
All sorts of things, but it really is about a more aggressive approach in large part. But the big part that you and I have talked about before, James, is, and it's part of the calculator, which in the original draft, when James created the calculator, it had the happy faces were all his face.
Yeah.
And the bad outcomes were all my face, which I thought
It was very easy. I just looked through the hundreds of pictures we had of each of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I could find for us.
Yeah. the negative ones were
that, yeah, yeah, bad exactly.
So, but it's about the treatment. And so what benefit would you, how much would you shave off of your risk if you took a statin? I guess is one of the big questions
exactly.
we have.
Yeah. So in this case, if we start at 5% and if you make the assumption that there's about a 25% relative benefit in reducing it from reducing cardiovascular events, this person would have about a 1.3% benefit. Because that's about a quarter of 5. But you could even round it off to say about a 1% benefit over the next 10 years. So in essence, you could say, if that's of value to you, then maybe we could consider a statin. But that's sort of what we're talking about.
Yeah. And in the past guideline, we decided to, because of pressures on family physicians, mm-hmm. we decided to make that the only conversation really had there was, or the one we encouraged was talking about lifestyle.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
We just encouraged that because we just, the committee did not feel that a reduction of 1.5% was really enough to bring in every patient and have that conversation.
No, exactly. About that. But you know, one could if that's if
yeah, that, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. There is one or two patients in a practice who might pick that.
Yeah. So then the next question is what would happen if we then remeasure the cholesterol? Well, there's two things that happen over time, Mike. Just so you know.
Okay.
Yeah. At least in our scenario, one, you get older.
And okay. I'm writing it down.
Are you? Yeah. Yeah. Good. Because mm-hmm. There'll be a multiple choice test in a minute. And then, in essence, your cholesterol could go up. Now, typically, on average, your cholesterol will go up maybe about 0.5% to maybe 1% per year. That's your average. And of course, there's outliers. But almost everybody would be covered under about a 2% per year increase in either total cholesterol and or HDL. So let's look at what risk is associated with that. So if you were just to age 10 years, but nothing else changed, this person, this female, would go from a 5% risk to an 8% risk. That's about a 3% absolute increase after 10 years just from getting older. And then if you are really clever, if you multiplied 8 by 25, you'd realize that person's benefit is now about 2% because that's a quarter of 8. So if you did nothing but just look at their age, that's what changes. And we're going to argue that almost all of the increase in risk is secondary to age, not other factors.
Yes, that's true of these risk. And we'll show that it becomes even more dramatic as we progress to examples.
Yeah, exactly.
In this person, because they're low risk, other things could contribute considerably more to risk for them. So if they decided to get diabetic and start smoking, they could get some serious increases in the relative increase in their risk.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure most guidelines don't recommend that.
No. Again, I'm writing this down.
James, I know. Yeah, don't
smoke. As you age, you get older. And smoking bad.
Yeah. So let's assume that not only did they age 10 years, but their cholesterol also went up by about 2% per year. So both their total cholesterol and HDL, which you can justify. Instead of being an 8% risk, it skyrockets, Mike,
mm-hmm.
to 8.5.
Holy cow.
I know. So there you go. Now,
so you're saying it's higher.
Yeah, exactly. Now, so it goes from 8 to 8.5. So you can see the major increase in risk has nothing to do with cholesterol. It has to do with your age. You've gone up 3% from 5 to 8 with just age. You add another 0.5%. Now, if you only look to total cholesterol going up, but typically when total cholesterol goes up, you have to HDL also goes up. But let's say it only went up. Now, instead of going to 8.5, it might go to about 9 or 9.5%, depending on what numbers you use. But the point of telling you this is you can see that almost all the risk is age. Cholesterol has very little to do with it because whether or not you use the person's risk as 8 versus 8.5 or 9, it makes almost no difference from the benefit. You're still only at about 2%.
Well, you're at 2.1%, James. I just wanted to make sure that
the math is correct.
Listening, understand 0.1%.
Exactly. So if you think that a person wouldn't take it at 2%, but would take it at maybe 2.1 or 2.2%, then you need to measure cholesterol. But we know that that's not going to be the case, but that's kind of what we're talking about. That's the mathematical reason, if you are going to use risk estimates, why all you have to do is just look at, their age. When they're 10 years older, you say this will be when your risk. And then just for a little bit of context, on average, your systolic blood pressure rises as you get older, about 0.5 to 1 millimeter of mercury per year. And even if your systolic blood pressure went up by about 10 millimeters of mercury over that 10-year period, that, again, only adds another 1% risk to your 10-year risk. So The big thing is age is the big risk factor, and it pretty much blows the other ones out of the water in an individual patient over time. And I think that's the point we're trying to get across. And anything else you want to add for that particular point, Mike?
No, just that, just what you were saying, like if you think about it in relative terms, going from 5 to get to 8, you know, that's a 3% increase. Going from 8 to 8.5 is a 0.5. The difference there is, so age in the relative terms is 6 times more impactful. And that, you know, this is something that I've mentioned to you before, James. I wrestled with when I was doing the original guideline, because I spent time reflecting on the fact that age is the dominant risk factor. Again, unless someone picks up one of the big ones or has a dramatic unlikely change, like a 40 millimeters of mercury increase in blood pressure. It's possible. But
it's
likely.
Really, really unlikely. I mean, I could see you could possibly see that with, you know, if you gained a lot of weight for blood pressure, but I don't know about total cholesterol. You'd have to really struggle somehow, because as you know, just because you eat cholesterol doesn't mean your cholesterol goes up. In fact, you know, it's sort of your cholesterol is not completely, but very heavily genetically determined anyway.
Yeah, the Dietary Council in the U.S. said that they're basically cholesterol is not a risk factor or something. I can't remember their exact.
Well, eating cholesterol.
Eating cholesterol. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. Except they said
dietary cholesterol is not a. But there's a lot of mechanism and story around that. We should talk about the second case.
So
15%.
So that's the lower risk. Now we have a person who's at about a 15% risk, and that's kind of in between those two numbers where people go, "Huh, I wonder. Maybe we should start thinking about treating this." But that's, again, that's what guidelines say. So this is a 50-year-old male diabetic. So the big difference here is they're male and they're diabetic. Most of the rest of the numbers are pretty similar. Systolic blood pressure 130, total cholesterol 4.4, HDL about 1. Now their baseline risk is 15%. So again, doing very simple math, if you take a quarter of that off, their benefit from a statin would be about 4% over 10 years. So that's where that's what you would see at baseline. Now, that may be enough for the person to consider treatment. And if it is, you probably don't have to measure cholesterols ever again, but that's another topic for another podcast. But that's the framework. That's the baseline where we are. Now, if this person ages 10 years and nothing else changes, he's still a diabetic, he's still a non-smoker, his blood pressure is the same numbers, his risk has gone from 15 now to 25%. So that's a 10% absolute increase. And therefore, instead of the benefit being about 4%, it's now somewhere between 6 to 7%. So it might be that at that point, the person would go, "Oh, that's a number big enough that I might want to take it." But that's what age does on its own.
So that's 10 points added. Yeah. And if we then take that same person, so they've aged the 10 years, we've just calculated their new risk, and we find out that their cholesterol uniquely has gone up, not entirely uniquely, but unusually, it's more than normal, but it's gone up 2% per year.
Yeah.
Their risk skyrockets where, James? Where does it go?
Just a little bit over 26. We rounded off the numbers at 26, but it's about 26. So really very little change. Now, if you only measure total cholesterol, it would, instead of being 25, it's now 30. But it's still, at most, it adds another 25% relative increase, which is pretty small. But if both go up, it's almost immeasurable compared to what age does.
So this is another example of how, as you're getting older, the other risk factors are mattering less.
I don't know if that's a consistent thing, but it certainly appears to be that way.
Yeah, and it's the relative effect. So it was 10% over 10 years and 1% over 10 years for the cholesterol impact. So it's like 1/10. And these numbers will vary with virtually every patient. But it's just important to kind of hone in on the fact that your driver here is age. The others are still playing a role. And if they change, dramatically, they'll maybe play more of a role. But the average patient, the real risk when you recalibrate, and this is true of bone mineral density, everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
When you look at your patients, their risk the next 10 years, it's the bone mineral density is going to be minimally helpful. What's contributing to their change and increase in risk is their age.
Right. No, exactly. And so, you know, when you're saying there's a dramatic increase and all that sort of stuff, I'm sure a number of you said, well, I remember a person.
Yes.
You know, 10 years, I waited 5 years and their cholesterol went up by, you know, 10, 20%. And we're going, well, that's good. But part of the problem is, if you just do single measurements like that, the amount of measurement variation, both analytic and biologic, is about 10 to 20%. So you will have many patients whose cholesterol goes up and down and up and down and up and down. But much of that is due to the measurement variation. We talked about that in previous podcasts, and we'll also talk about it later when we talk about, is there any reason to measure cholesterol once you're on a medication? But what we're trying to do is encourage you to say that is the, it's mainly age that's increasing. So if you have a baseline of cholesterol, and I guess, you know, if, I couldn't argue if you said, look, you know, I'd like to do it one more time, because who knows, maybe they made a lab error or whatever, but you get a baseline, you might not need to do it again, because as long as you know how much older they have gotten, and that's pretty easy if you have a driver's license, just literally ask them for their driver's license, and that will help you.
Or a passport or something.
Or a passport or something. Yeah.
So there's obviously there's more to play here than the evidence or just this math exercise that we've done, because we've positioned a lot of value on it. We know those of us in practice, when we've tried to talk to patients about, you don't need your cholesterol again this year, you had it done last year or 2 years ago, even that, and many of them will say, I won't go on a pill anyway.
Right.
And yet they'll ask you to have their cholesterol checked. And so there's a lot going on here, more than just the risk estimates and all of that. And some of you may say, so you've got variability in the test. There's also variability in the risk estimate. So
Oh, for sure.
That's somewhere between 1% and 3% if you've estimated less than 10%. The variability is somewhere around 3 to 5 once you're in the kind of 10 to 20% range. And then the plus or minus, when you're at 30 or so, can be as much as 15%.
Yeah, no, exactly. So these are
all of these things are quite variable, and we recognize that. And the exercise we put you through is trying to give you some imply a level of certainty that you can't actually get to with either the cholesterol measurement.
No, exactly.
Or with the risk estimate. But it's a good exercise to reflect on where the real risk is coming from, and when you read the, I think it was the veterans, and I can't remember who exactly, but they said to cholesterol measurements every 10 years is quite reasonable. This is where it's coming from. There's just the increase in age is where most of your risk is coming from, yeah. Not from changes that are generally quite small.
Yeah. And I think the final thing is that if for some reason that you did remeasure your cholesterol, and if it went up by 2%, the additional difference between the benefit of from a statin increases by about 0.5%.
Yeah.
So it's not something that that's going to make it or break it. And we think, you know, if we're having this podcast so you can have these conversations with people to break them of that sort of addiction to cholesterol that we all have, from that sort of perspective. And what the scenarios that we just described was using the Framingham model, which actually looks at all the cardiovascular outcomes, not just heart attacks and strokes. And we're not going to go over another couple of patients, but if you look at the some of the risk engines like QRisk and ASCVD that are used in the States that only look at heart outcomes like heart attacks and strokes, the difference is even smaller than what we're saying. That's what's so really interesting, because the overall numbers are smaller. So I think what we've tried to do is show you that age by far is the biggest risk factor. And I think once you know a single cholesterol measurement, even in the worst case scenario, if the cholesterol changes a lot, even more than say 2% per year over the next 10 years, the impact is so small on what the overall risk is compared to the age thing. And you really don't get a huge difference in what the theoretical benefit is of a statin. So if you believe that your decision should be based on a shared decision with a person about here's your benefit, here's the benefit, here's the harm, and so on, then once you've got one, you don't really need to do it. And that's why, we're, you know, I think we're going to, we struggle going, well, should it be 5 years or 10 years or 15 years? I think you could make an argument to not do it.
But you could, you could make an argument to not do it, but we also have to find the compromise and clinical application and all of those things. But you're pointing out the using the additional calculators, and we had mentioned before about the lowering of the targets, and that is part of the justification for lowering targets, is that we're looking only at hard outcomes now. So we, you know, so the cutoff of 7.5% to consider starting therapy is argued for the ASCVD calculator. I think that there's elements of us wanting to increase intervention rates, but there is the fact that it is, they do have lower risks in general. But all of these things are playing a role. The what the benefit is, what the outcomes are, what the time frame is, all of that factors in. But in the end, patients love to have their lab tests done and their numbers checked and all of that. Yes. And there's a reassurance there. And some of that reassurance, as we've mentioned, is a false reassurance.
No, exactly. And I think, you know, for those of you who listen to our podcast a long time, we try to make things easier. Yeah. You know, simplified, and but not more than that. If you know what I mean.
Well, not compromising care.
No, and exactly.
You could argue that you could provide pretty good care, maybe by never testing cholesterol. Actually, you could argue never testing cholesterol at all, because you can probably substitute
BMI or something. Yeah.
Yeah, BMI there. But like, you could argue that you can just test once and use that and even say, well, let's just increase it 0.5% per year or 1%.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you cannot increase it because the differences are small. But there will be an element to people. It would kind of be like blood pressure. Mm-hmm. You know, we expect you to go up by this amount, but everyone's different and they want to know what they are.
Yeah.
What happened to their number. And even though the difference over something like 5 years is either 2.5 to 5% on average, and the variance in the test between 7 and 12%, the obviously the variance will overpower change.
Yeah, exactly. There's so many still, reasons. Yeah.
Still people love the test. So we're giving you the information, but we recognize you have to find a happy compromise. If you started to tell your patients you never need another cholesterol check in your life, and they told the cardiologist when they visited the cardiologist, there would be a small explosion.
Yeah, and so, but I think this, you know, as with everything, these require a discussion. It's not saying, no, we don't need to, I've decided that you don't need your cholesterol measured anymore. Because that, you know, you say, no, let's talk about it. And it could be a pretty simple discussion. Your biggest risk factor is age.
You're getting older.
Yeah.
Stop having birthdays or use anti-aging cream.
Yeah, which you know, works very well.
Yeah.
Just kidding. So anything else on that, Mike?
No, I think we've covered it. I mean, it's really just, it's hard to completely put into practice, but we can start feeling guilt. Stop feeling guilty, certainly, if you haven't measured it this year.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Absolutely, for sure.
So,
and you'll see in our guidelines a reflection of this evidence in some way or another.
Yeah. And so I'm sure some of you are going, that's the best you could do with take two. But anyway, CFPC Learn, Mike.
Let's talk about CFPC Learn. So it's an online learning program where you have a variety of learning options, ranging from reading through tools for practice and answering a few simple questions to watching pipe videos, the pipe conference, which is a classical kind of presentation of medical information, but mostly evidence, to podcasts. There's a lot of podcasts, including, James, you might have heard of this one, the BS Medicine podcast.
No, not really.
It's on there, and you can get, it's certified, and you can get credits, and it's direct credit entry for those of you who have been frustrated with the process of entering your credits, etc. So if you're a family doc, it makes a nice option for you that way. So
excellent.
We are pushing it, but there are some benefits.
Yeah.
CFPC Learn.
And then a couple of things, though, our conference in Vancouver, a two-day conference is coming up May 12 and May 13. We'll let you know more about that as that comes along. And one additional thing, and I think just very quickly, if you guys, I know a number of you out there have seen some of these weird educational medical musical parodies I do. Well, I just recently posted one on so the whole concept of shared decision making, and it's a parody of the song "We Are the World" by USA for Africa. So, and there's a guy who sings on it that does every frickin' one of those voices. It's really good. At least I don't know if the video is any good because I did that, but his vocals are incredible. But if you're interested in that, just go to my YouTube channel on just James McCormack YouTube and check that out, because I think it's a really important message, and I think maybe your patients would get a kick out of listening to it as well. So I think we'll just leave it at that. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.